Hello and welcome to January's Q&A. So like normal, I've got some submitted questions from beginner guitar career members, which I'm going to go through in just a minute. Before we dive into that though, I just want to go through a bit of beginner guitar career news. And just in case you haven't seen kind of recent announcements, show what I've added to the Academy so you don't miss out. And the first thing is the blues licks. So if I scroll down, you'll see we have five simple blues licks. Now the idea of the simple blues licks, well, as the name probably suggests, there are five licks that are simple and work well in blues. But the idea here is if you're struggling with improvisation, which a lot of students have been telling me recently, okay, so I want to improvise, but where do I start? I've got my minor pentatonic scale, but it just sounds like I'm playing the scale. How do I start creating licks and phrases and eventually then solos? So what I've done here is put five little licks. Each one focuses on a particular technique. I break it down. I talk about the phrasing ideas, how you can use it. So each one of these licks is like a little catalyst that's going to help you improvise. You can take the idea and then develop it. So it gives you a starting point. So if you are struggling with improvisation, definitely check this out. You'll find it in the quick lick section. So if you go to dashboard, you can see it there, the quick lick section. You also see it in the recently added as well. I've also added a new section to the Academy, backing tracks. And here is where I'm going to add backing tracks, which I use in my classes, the ones I find online, which are quite cool. So it saves you having to, you know, go down the rabbit hole that is YouTube trying to find some good backing tracks. So you've all done it. You go to YouTube to quickly get a track or something. Before you know it, you're watching another guitar video. You're watching something else, you know, something random. And, you know, half an hour is gone and you only went there really quickly just to grab a backing track. This will save you from doing that. So at the minute, I've put on just a few blues ones to help with those blues licks. The idea is we have one in the key of A minor, so a groovy guitar backing track. All the licks, the five basic licks, are in the key of A minor, so you can put them straight on that backing track. But then what we need to do is take those licks and put them into other keys. So we've got G, we've got B, we've got C, D, E minor, all the kind of common blues keys. So that's the next level. So it's great to learn little riffs, but when you can start moving them to different keys, then you can play over any key. You can take that idea and just roll with it. And that's where we want to get to, where you can see what scale position you're in, what key you're in, and then move it around the neck to different keys and, yeah, make the most of that idea, basically. So that's a new section, back tracks. So six there a minute. I'll be adding to this, obviously, as we move forward, just adding little cool back tracks as they come along. Eventually, there'll be back tracks there covering every key that we work on at beginning guitar career, every scale we look at. Level one, we've got the C major scale, G major, and E minor pentatonic. There'll be back tracks for each one of those scales. So you can put those scales into use and start improvising. That's the best way of getting a scale under your fingers, is obviously using it creatively. And obviously that will allow you to do it. So now that's out of the way, let's move on and get into some questions. And the first question I have is, any advice on how to not mute certain strings when playing certain chords? Is it finger placement, or maybe it's not pressing down on the string hard enough? And this is from Cornelius. So when we're pushing down on the strings, if we are not pushed down hard enough, is when we're going to get buzzes or dead notes where you can't hear anything. But normally, say if I take a C chord, if we can't hear a string, and it's a string we're not holding down, it's an open string, and in the case of C, it's the open G string, but it's not sounding open, it's gonna be that a finger's touching it. So my second finger is just hanging down and muting the string underneath it. So to get around that, we need to arch our finger up and make sure it is clearing the G string, it's not touching it. And how we can do that is just with finger placement. So if you can't get the arch in your fingers, move your thumb down the back of the neck. You can see my wrist comes out more around the front of the guitar. And then that's going to give me more arching. It's going to give me more elevation above those strings. So if it's an open string that you haven't got a finger on and it's not sounding, it's going to be a finger touching it. If it has got a finger on that string, say, for instance, it's the first fret of the B string in my C chord, and I'm getting muting, then it might be a pressure issue. Then we need to probably push down a little bit harder. But make sure we push down in the right place. So we want tip of finger close to the metal body side. We don't want the metal neck side, so back here. So that's going to make it a lot harder to get the sound, because you need to push down that little bit more. And sometimes it's just impossible to get a clean sound because of where it's positioned. So make sure we're close to the metal, fingertip, thumb down, arching those fingers, and then we should get the good sound. You know, thumb around the back should be the thumbs up, not on the side, not on the tip. Pull that together, and then we should basically have all the good technique. Now, the way to really get this in is to pick each string one at a time. You'll probably hear, oh, that's muted. Adjust the finger so you can hear it, and then rinse and repeat. You could even lose the shape, reform it. Go back through, adjust. What we're basically doing here is programming our fingers, getting into what you call your muscle memory. So fingers default to that shape. So every time you get a great chord, you don't get the mutes. Now this will take many repetitions, so you've got to be patient here. It's going to take some time to really get this down, but the benefit of spending time with it is you're going to have a great sounding chord. And you spend the time now all the way through, and as we progress, we're going to have great sounding chords. And these chords, your C's, your G's, your E minors, all the kind of level one and level two chords, you're going to see all the way through your guitar playing. It's in so many songs that you're going to see them all the time. So it's well worth spending a bit of time. Yes, it'll be a bit frustrating because it's going to take some time to develop it, but you'll get a great sounding chord because of it. So definitely spend some time with that. So hopefully that answers that question. So next question is from Nicholas, and it is how to perform melodic arpeggios effectively with notes from fret zero when next note is on another string. This is kind of another muting question, because melodic arpeggios, if you haven't come up to them yet, you do them at the end of level one. They're not on the level assessment because they're fairly challenging, but we do see them in higher levels and they are on level assessments. So it's something we do want to be aware of. And a melodic arpeggio is where you play each note one at a time. And it sounds like a scale, but you're playing one at a time. They don't ring into one another. We haven't got this. That's a harmonic arpeggio. So harmonic meaning harmony, multiple notes sounding together. Melodic arpeggio, melody, one note at a time. So to get that one note at a time, if we have a finger on a string, you just take pressure off, that will kill it. So you don't keep the pressure down, that leaves it to ring, you take pressure off. But like Nicholas said, then you have problems when you have open strings. There's no finger there to take off. So how do you stop that before we get to the next string? So I have an open G, first fret on the B. Now the open G is still sounding, so we're creating this harmonic arpeggio. So to do that, we could use either hand. It'll probably be easier to use your picking hand. And then all I'm doing is touching the G string before I play the B. So I'm playing it on the G string, open G. Then my thumb, side of my thumb, just touches it just before I pick the B string. So we have G, B. And you can hear I'm just coming to rest on that G string with the side of my thumb before I pick the B. That creates the separation between the notes. Now when we go backwards, that's more of a problem because now we're going up, there's nothing there to touch it. So what we could do in this situation is use the palm of our hand. And I'll show you again, I'll just twist my hand into the string before I play the G string. Makes sense? So it's either the side of your thumb as you're going towards the floor, going up in pitch, or the side of your hand as you're going down in pitch towards the ceiling. So that's the way I'd do it. So if you go to the live recording section of the website, scroll down, you'll see here's where all the Q&As are and the live lessons. And there's actually a live lesson on arpeggios where I go through the techniques. So definitely check that out if you haven't already, because I go a bit more detail about what I was just talking about. So yeah, definitely check out. But it's all to do with, say, the thumb or the side of your hand. Now you can do that with the picking hand as well. So I'm using my second finger to touch a G string before I put down that first finger. So you can do it the fretting hand as well. Play around with it and see which one basically makes sense. It just might be a bit slower with the fretting hand. With the picking hand, it's a little bit easier. You've got a bit more control and it's a bit closer to strings. You have to worry about touching it and then get on to the next one. It's a bit more obviously complex using this hand because there's more going on. But definitely give it a go and just see which one works. So now let's move on. But I hope that answers your question, Nicholas. So a question from Lee. I asked this last month, but I think there was some confusion. Finger picking when you are doing riffs or songs, if there is multiple notes on a single string, are you alternating fingers or only using which finger you assign to that string? It seems like you would have to do some type of alternating finger style. Hopefully that is more clear. Yeah, I do actually remember that question. And I can't remember how I answered it. So obviously not how it was supposed to be. So let's go back through that. So it really depends how quickly the phrase is. So if I'm playing multiple notes on a single string, I'm just using the same finger. And you can see I'm getting quite quick doing that. I suppose a good song for that is something like Dust in the Wind, where you are playing like the B string over and over again, just changing the note on it, so you create that nice little melody. But each time I'm using the finger I'd normally would use or designate for that string, which would be my middle finger. Then our ring finger is going to go on the toppy underneath. So you could do it like that. You could bring in your fingers. So for instance, I could play with my, again, middle finger on the B. And if it's very quick, then use my ring finger on the B as well. So we do have alternating fingers. Now you see that in classical music. And you see it in kind of bass guitar as well, where you see the bass player doing this, where he's walking his fingers. Now you could do that. You see that in classical guitar where you're walking fingers. I would normally just designate the finger of the string, and if it's not, you know, crazy fast, which it probably won't be, that's obviously fine. The idea of designating each finger a string is so you can quickly play the next string. So you're not having to kind of rush around with one or two fingers. Each finger has its own string. And then it makes it a lot easier to play multiple strings at the same time. Makes it a lot easier to play more complicated melodic patterns. So multiple strings, different orders. So that's what I try and adhere to. Again, not set in stone though. If it is very fast, you're struggling a little bit, you could alternate fingers. That's doable. Say it's used in classical music. But yeah, I'd normally adhere to which finger we'd normally use for it. So hopefully that answers the question now, Lee, and makes a bit more sense. So let's move on. And next question is a big one. Please could you give me an overview of using single note fills in between chord changes? I think Neil Young does this, and Bon Jovi Wanted Dead or Alive is another example that comes to mind, and they sound good. What is the theory behind them? If we want to experiment with using open chords, are they established fills that people use for certain chord changes, or in more a case of understanding the theory behind choosing the relevant open strings and taking it from there? Is it based on choosing notes from the chord that you are currently playing, or notes from the chord that you are changing to, or scale, etc.? Cool. Let's dive into this. And I have actually got one still live to show you kind of the idea behind it. Well, let's start with that actually. Let's start with Wanted Dead or Alive, because there's a few ideas that he does with this. Let me quickly share my screen. So hopefully you can see that. So at the very top, in the second bar in, he's doing just a D chord. And then just pulling off his pinky finger from third fret to second fret, from a D sus 4 to a D. And then hammering on open E string to second fret for from the D sus 2 to a D. So he's playing around with these sus chords. So sometimes you're gonna see that, we have embellishments. There you go, you can see me now. So sometimes you're gonna have that where you have embellishments using suspended chords or sus chords. And that's really common, where you, for instance, stick it on a D chord and you play around with it. Stuff like Breakfast at Tiffany's, Stray jumps out there. Psalm 69 jumps out there, where he's just picking the sus 2 and the sus 4 around that normal D chord. Does it with the A as well, A sus 2, A sus 4. Now there's a sheet of sus chords in the resource section on Beginner Guitar Academy on the desk, desktop. So go and check that out. Or dashboard, sorry, not desktop. So that's the idea in that bar. Then as he progresses through, he's got his C add 9, G. Then he's putting in, I suppose, you could look at his chord tones, you could look at his scale tones as well, because those notes are in the chord, second fret on the A string, open D, open G, it's just straight from the G chord. The open A is not, that is an additional note, so that then could be construed as just a scale tone. So think kind of like G major or G major pentatonic. So in that regard, I'd say that is more scale, because that note isn't in it. You can see it sounds very Sweet Home Alabama-esque, which is that sort of idea as well, where he's using notes from G major pentatonic. So you can see this is nice, because there's two ways he's kind of thinking here or doing it. One is from a chordal approach. That D chord is bringing the D sus 2, D sus 4. And then from the G, he's doing more of a scale approach. He just does the same lick. And again, then we've got this sort of sus shape where he's pulling off to a sus 2. So yeah, so there's two approaches there, either will work. So let me come back fully on screen. And we dive into it a little bit more now. So let's take some chords, and there's a few things I want to talk about here. So again, we've just talked about the sus approach. So we can move around, add in extra chords, do that on the C as well, really well. A, E, really sus 4, back in F. So you can add in these chord tones. Now that is actually still technically, I suppose, coming from the scale. We're thinking more chordally. The other way is thinking more scalic. Now this is quite a Hendrix-y thing to do. You'll see this all the time in his playing, where he's playing like a bar chord here. Thumb over the top, Hendrix-y style. And then puts in. You know, these extra notes, which are just take it from the scale. Associated with the chord, so I'm playing the G major chord, I'm then playing the G major scale or notes from it to embellish around that chord. Now, if we do the same thing open, if I took like a C chord, there's my C scale, you know, level one scale, I could play that C chord. And embellish around it. Now, it reminds me of a song, but I can't think what song that is. Oh, it's a Ryan Adams song. Just hammering on these different notes, picking them. So that works really well. So that is scale over top of the chord. And some embellish around that. Really good song for this one is The Beatles. A Norwegian Wood, which just takes a D chord and puts basic scale around it. And you're just playing these different scale notes. Which sounds really good. So there's a few examples of what you could do. But yeah, we're taking notes either from scale or either from the chord. Another cool thing to do is take something like Johnny Cash. Where he walks into the chord. Now that instance, if I'm going from the A chord to the E chord, I'm walking down the E scale into the E chord. I'm going to go to the A chord, just walk it back up it. Then I'll walk up, putting that C sharp, going to my D chord, so again, major scale. And then go backwards. So that's quite a nice thing to do as you move between chords, changing the bass note, doing these little bass runs. So again, then I'm feeling scalic, or thinking scalic, and actually playing scale notes leading to the chord. So the most common approach is doing it, so you're thinking chords, we're adding our sus2, sus4s around the chord shape, or if we can scale like the Norwegian Wood idea, where we're just putting those notes in around it. So again, thinking scale, so you're putting the scale over the top of your chord. So yes, there is some theory involved in that. It is a little bit more, it's not just kind of wildly picking. You can just kind of take notes near the shape and that will probably work, but it is normally coming from a scale. So hopefully that makes sense, David. Give you some ideas to kind of play around with and kind of how to pursue that idea. Let's now move on to Jesse's question. When playing right-handed, where do you place your guitar when you sit? Right leg or left? I do both, but neither feel right. Left leg feels better with the neck position, but still there's something off. So sitting position is a really important thing to actually talk about. I do go over it in the complete beginner lessons. And yeah, right leg or left leg. So right leg, you'll see a lot of people do. It's kind of a contemporary position. Disadvantage of that, though, is the neck's quite far away. So you'll probably find you naturally tilt the guitar body a little bit so you can see what's going on. Or you're hunching, leaning over, craning your neck over the guitar neck to see what's going on. So what we really want to be able to do here is obviously see the neck easily. And if I put that on the other leg, so I'm just going to shift around a little bit. Now you can see the neck is a lot higher. So it's nearer my field of vision, so it's a bit easier to see. That's a benefit what you'd call the classical positioning. The neck's a lot higher. Better for posture because your neck's a lot straighter. Now classical music's been around a lot longer than contemporary music. So it's been kind of trial and error. This has determined the best way to sit over, you know, hundreds of years of sitting and refining it. But doesn't work for everybody. Now, what I would recommend doing is a footrest. Now, you can pick these up off Amazon, not very expensive, but it's going to allow you to make your leg higher or make it lower and to make it a lot more comfortable. Now, I'm sitting in contemporary position at the minute, just so the guitar is a bit easier to see on the video, but I'm still using that footrest just to raise my leg a little bit. So that can really be really helpful. You can also get things that you can put on your guitar, like little cushions or little razors that you can have then in classical position, which is then going to do that. So it's going to hold that a little bit higher, so it puts it in a good position. You can again adjust that, and it's going to then allow you to find the best position for you. So it's a bit of try and error. One way is not the best way. It's playing around, see which way kind of sits with you. But the missing piece might be that footrest, just for making your leg that little bit higher, making it a bit more comfortable. So I definitely experiment with that. Grab a footrest, give that a go, but play around and see which one basically makes sense for you. So next question, any tips to speed up chord changes? Is it just practice, practice, practice? I'm working on chord changing at least an hour every day. Wow. But don't feel like I'm getting any quicker. Some I can do pretty simply, but others I can still only do one finger placing at a time. Cool. So yes, speed up chord changes. Now, I do have a challenge in the academy. Let me quickly show you that. So you'll find that in the live recordings, and it was a 5-day speed up your chord change challenge that I put on Facebook or ran through Facebook. But I'll kind of go over a few of them now, but definitely go and check that out. But I'll go through some of the ideas that I discussed there. Because yeah, it's not just practice, practice, practice. Now, I've talked about this before. Eventually you get to a point where it is repetition. You've got to put in the reps to get it, but you've got to have good technique before you do that. If we've got bad technique, we're obviously just practicing bad technique. We're going to learn it wrong. So we've got to make sure we've got it really well placed, the techniques in you know, under our fingers before we go to just repping it, or we're just going to rep bad technique. So one thing we do very early on in level one is look at pivot finger. So if you do E minor chord, you use fingers 1 and 2. Use a finger 2 on the second fret of the D string, then means we can keep it down as we change to A minor, which means as you go from A minor to E minor, 50% of the chord is already down. So it's also going to make it a lot quicker because half is already done for you. So if you have got pivot fingers like that, you have that from like 4-finger G, we're doing level 2 to D, you keep that third finger down. E minor 7 to G, you keep 3 fingers down. So some chords have common notes which are shared between both the chords. If you can find those, you can keep the finger down. That's going to obviously make it a lot faster. So that's what you can do if you've got a shortcut. If you haven't, then what you want to do is keep your fingers close to the strings as you're moving and do what Justice Sanico calls air changes. So you see I'm forming the shape before I get there. I'm not getting to that C in place one at a time. I'm making that third finger come up because I know it's going to go to the A string. First finger's going down because it goes to the B string. So I'm anticipating where those fingers are going to end, the shape, in before I get there. A great way of getting out of the putting down fingers 1, 2, and 3 in that sequence, because you'll find you're probably stepping up that C, is what we call a folded corner. So start with different fingers. So second finger, third finger, first finger, second finger, third finger, first. Then you go third, first, second, third, first, second, then third, second, first. Basically, we're doing all the different combinations. So we get used to putting down all different fingers in different orders. So eventually fingers just go down at once. You just train them up so well, they all just fall together. That's where we want to get to. Obviously, I'll take a little bit of programming, like all the things I've kind of said today. But hang in there. Obviously, you'll get it. It just takes a little bit of repetition again. So that's a good way of stepping out of placing fingers in the order 1, 2, 3 and starting to get them down together is the folded corners. So you do them individually, different orders. Then you start putting down 2 fingers at once, again, different orders. And then eventually, obviously, you're hitting all 3 fingers at once. And we cracked it. Again, slow changes, but keep your fingers low. Make sure, because this happens quite often when you change like G to D, my third finger goes up to the B string, but quite often people change from G to D and third finger will go actually the wrong direction, then come back. So look for things like that. Make sure you're heading in the direction you want to be going to and not totally opposite direction and having to switch and then go back again. That takes up time. So it's just fine tuning your movements. And that is isolation. You hear me talk about that a lot. Just focus on that one hand. Make sure things go into the right places. And then bring in strumming later. Again, we don't want to wear out strumming until fingers are really, you know, get habitualized and find the right shape. So there's a few ideas there, but definitely check out the Speed Up Your Chord Changes 5-day challenge because there's loads of good ones there that will really help out. So guys, that is all of the questions I had submitted for this Q&A. So like normal though, if you do have any other questions, just let me know in the support bubble. Tag me in the forum. Obviously, I'm always here to help you guys out. Any questions, do let me know. Otherwise, I'll speak to you in the community.